Hi, I'm your host, Bianca Lopez. It's a pleasure to welcome you to this movement brought to you by HSBC. This is Voices of Data. Our goal is to unveil the data world, bring you the coolest and brightest people out there to help you understand and realize what are the impacts of data and analytics in our everyday lives. There are many ways how artificial intelligence is trying to address the concerns of inequality and biases. AI has emerged as a powerful medium to bring a more holistic representation into decision-making. For instance, many AI tools help companies to reduce biases in the hiring process, a pretty common one, but we can do a lot more. So how can we design organizations to change their foundational assumptions using technology? We're creating machines that cannot cope with such complexity and deep prejudice or biases the society has. But we can change this with a human help. To talk about in our next episode, we sat down with two HSBC leaders. And later, we will hear from Lady Miriam, the founder of I Am The Code. I'm here with Thailand Tour and Group Head of Customer Products and Strategy, and Charlotte So, Global Head of Marketing and Customer Channel Analytics. Welcome, you guys.
Hello.
Hi, Bianca.
Thank you for joining me today. We're going to talk about data and how data is changing banking and pretty much the world as we know it right now. So when I bring it home to humanity, we always ask our guests a question. And the question is to define something to a 10-year-old. So today's topic felt fitting to be diversity. How would you define diversity to a 10-year-old?
Well, I don't think we need to define diversity to a 10-year-old. They would probably, they don't comprehend and they don't think that way. I mean, by the way, my daughter is now 15 years old. She's a teenager, and she could have lectured me, 5 years back too. And I don't think she's any different than the other 10 years old. What I love about the new generation, 10 or, doesn't matter, 5, 10, how they grow up mostly, I hope, through is they, it's just so given. It's so natural for them. They don't think about boy, girl, or gender, black, white, doesn't matter what it is, right?
For them, it's so much wider than binary, right?
Yeah, and I've tested it, it's like I tested a few concepts with her at home. She almost like, why are you talking about that? I don't get it. I don't need to explain to them because it's so given for them. That's my short answer.
They already know it. I love it, Dylan. How about you, Charlotte? How would you explain? Do you have a daughter or son?
So I agree with Thailand. I have a two young daughter. They are much younger. So I have a one just turned 7, another one just turned 5. So we live in Chicago, which is a very diverse city. And to Thailand's point, this age generation, they don't see color. They don't see gender at all. And in fact, at home, my husband is a physician, but he is doing most of the cooking and the cleaning around the house. So I think we grew up in a way. They see it and they don't see it, right? So they don't see color, especially living in Chicago. But I think what they see in terms of diversity is people look different than them. So I think that's how they see diversity.
So as a bank that has a global presence, you have so many different markets, so many different customers. Like, I can't imagine and compute the amount of data and information that you get across all these different markets. So how does HSBC Thailand help and use this data to develop products to really fit customers' needs?
Yeah, Bianca, that's very true. First of all, this is a big portfolio where we have more than 38 million customers in our WPB portfolio and across 34 markets. Right? I hope that's by definition almost puts it very clearly how diverse portfolio that we are serving day in, day out. So it's a unique customer base. I mean, it could be the customers, the families in Hong Kong, students in Canada, or executive in Mexico, expats in Dubai. I can keep going, right? Or a business owner in Malta and so much more. So this is a diverse portfolio, a diverse set of customers. And from this small sample, all of these demographics have very different needs from their bank, from us. And that will continually evolve, right? It's not going to stop. That will change all the time. And it is our very job to be very flexible, very agile and adaptable to support them to take advantage of what they're after, what they want to achieve in their life.
Charlotte, I'm going to change the challenge and bring you a different challenge. How do you think, like, now changing this to a conversation, how do you guys think this just kind of perpetuates the obvious that we need diverse teams if we want to use data to its full power?
Yeah, so I think, you know, a diversity topic probably addressed from different cross-functional team, you know, but since I'm sitting in data analytics, if I could kind of just picking something in my domain, this tend to be a generalization, such as, you know, John makes a better programmer than Mary, right? So that's a very classic example. They are certain tech firm, they have this recruiting tool, just because historically tend to be male in the programming field. So the recruiting tool kind of pick up that trend and they pick up the trigger, right, from the resume. I think this is collective effort, but if I'm just addressing from AI and the data analytics, actually I see a lot of positive trend in the field, right? But if I'm looking at the academia side, which is really the breeding ground for the next generation of AI and the data scientists, taking the two schools I'm working very closely in the past 5 years, Northwestern University, McCormick Engineering School, specialized in AI and machine learning, you know, their class 2017, only 40% of female. By class 2020, actually 50% are female. So diversity is not just about gender.
It's not diversity of
thought and the competency. Yeah, and another example I would like to give is we work closely is UC Berkeley. It's one of the most diverse school, I would say, in California. They have underrepresented minority by ethnicity enroll in the undergrad program 2020, and that's like growing from 10% to now a quarter of it.
Imagine what they'll make up together. Imagine what that kind of diverse team with all these different perspectives could come up with. Island, you manage not only from customers to strategy to products. How has diversity come up for you in a theme as a leader? Like, how has that made you grow businesses and provide value?
So our day-to-day is all about models and where we build models. And in those models, as you mentioned, the input is all about the data analytics, and it's even more, you know, complex, sophisticated input to come up with more sophisticated outputs now, i.e. AI and machine learning are going into those models now. Obviously, the bias or the unintended consequence of bias is a big consideration for us. How to avoid that, how to mitigate it if we face it in these models. And I think, you know, there, I think Charlotte is very, very right. The diversity of the teams who do the input are probably the biggest safeguard to make sure that, you know, basically we can control, if not fully mitigate or fully avoid it, is we can mitigate the unintended consequences of the bias models through the right governance. I know this sounds a bit, you know, boring to refer to governance.
No, not at all. You're talking about
that's what it is.
Governing rules of like what's going to kind of define right or wrong, or what's going to go into a decision to make sure it's really equitable and fair.
But if you have a homogeneous team which lacks diversity and lacks those unique different viewpoints or experiences, and it's even the diversity on the diversity discussion, right? You know, it's not a single aspect. But if you don't take that into your operating model, then you do have the risk of ending up with subpar solutions, which would not be inclusive of our entire customer base, and that's a risk.
I had a great time.
Great, thanks for hosting us, Bianca. I really enjoyed it. It's great.
Our next guest is Leigh Marion James.
She's the founder of I Am the Code and has a bold ambition that by 2030, she'll have helped a million girls across the world learn how to code.
So, Lady Marianne, for people that don't know you, tell them a little bit about you.
I think I'm just like a purpose-driven person. Like, you know, I don't give up and I never gave up.
Is that what purpose-driven means to you?
Yeah, I just don't give up. And then, you know, I really stay true to myself and what I can do. So, you know, for my background, for people who don't know, you know, I'm Senegalese by origin, but I'm based here in the UK now. So, but I've been working extremely hard for the last 25 years, really, to discover myself.
That's amazing. And I think what purpose is like is in life, the purpose to kind of go back to who you're always meant to be, right? And how mm-hmm. it's sort of the source. And I think that's what I love when I think about some of your work with I Am the Code, of yep. putting these incredible humans and girls in this position of realizing that evolution or who they could be and lifting themselves to a completely different vibration and opportunity, and they'll build a brand new tribe. Like, tell us more, like, what is I Am the Code for people that don't know?
I mean I Am the Code is really a how do I describe I Am the Code. So it's a foundation now. We become a charity last year, actually just in the middle of COVID-19 we become a foundation. And
congratulations.
And I was hoping that you know, we will get, you know, very, very busy. And I was like, oh my God, you know, the girls will suffer. They're going to have COVID-19, you know, the camp will be, you know, infected. And oh, I was so distressed. And then I called the lawyers very quickly. We did the foundation, and then we just become a charity, a foundation. We are now in 69 countries. We have 27,000 girls into the program. So we have a very clear vision and mission to teach 1 million women and girls how to code. You know, we have 37 companies backing this big data because it's a very serious one. And so the goal really is to get young women and girls who are from marginalized communities. I help them to become, you know, the better of themselves, and tell them, you know, you are visible. You need to dare to be visible, because, you know, being a refugee, growing up in a favela, in a slum, it's really not your fault.
You know what that is, right? Like, to me, like, lady, you're making people like be awakened to like their birthright of being special and being anything they want to be. And you're kind of equipping them with the tool that is hot. It's going to build society in the future. And you're saying, hey, like, I'm not going to be neutral
yeah.
about the prejudice. I'm not going to be neutral about what happened, which I think it's like a new dimension of like what actual inclusion and diversity was supposed to mean.
I mean, we're here for when I talk about the experiment and my evolution, I feel that, you know, I probably may live another 50 years if I'm lucky, if I'm healthy. And so while I'm here, I really need to leave a legacy. And the legacy is not house, it's not, you know, a bank account full of money, it's not how my face look like, it's not, you know, the glory or the number of diplomas I've gained, but it's every single person I touch. And this is my mission. So I made it my mission every single day. When I wake up, I try to educate, transform and inform people that they need to do better. And I was not lucky. Society let me down as a child, but today I'm in a position of influence. You know, I didn't know that I will have all I have today. I didn't know I will have this attention. I didn't know I will have this intelligence. I didn't know I will have, you know, all of this abundance and, you know, and growth. So if you really think about it, 10 years from now, 10 years is not that long, really. We just need to think about what society do you want to build? You know, I was, you know, if you want to make a real impact, what do you want to do? Do you want to just sit down and watch, or do you want to do something about this? And so I decided that we're going to do something about this, and we're going to get these girls. And I'm just doing a service to humanity, basically. And then I'm not going to give up until it's done.
I have an ending question that I'm not allowed to end without asking you. And it's us trying to, in this shared desire for building some language, like level setting a little bit, we always ask, how would you define something for a five-year-old?
That's an interesting question. So what I teach to, what I say to the young girls, I tell them to go and find water, flour, and oil. Let's start doing a pizza base. So we do a pizza base, and then we finish doing the pizza base together. And then so they can see all the elements, and then we put the pizza base together. And then once they have that, we then start making the pizza. But before we make the pizza, we have the base, which is the foundation. So again, like I said earlier, and this comes to life, to everything you do. If you don't have the foundation, you can't do anything else. If you don't have it, you cannot give it. So if you don't have the pizza base, you cannot, you know, have a pizza. So, but you can have the ingredients, the pineapple, the ham, the mushroom, the onions, all of that. You can put that.
If you were a Hawaiian fan.
Yeah, you can have Hawaiian fan. And so I show them that, you know, the oven, so it's really us, humanity, us being there, right? So if you want
to... What heats it up? What makes it happen?
Exactly. And then it depends. And so, you know, and I said to them, put that in the oven. And then I give them, you know, analogies, and they can put the ingredients in, and it depends. If they don't have it, the pizza will become very soggy. If they don't take their time to do it properly, if they don't learn, they educate themselves, they don't do anything, the code will not work, because if you don't code properly, you're never going to get the results. You can't cheat. You can copy and paste, but someone will find out that you cheated, and then your credibility will be on the line. So take your time to code. Every single symbol matters, you know, and every single dot, every single, you know, like I said, symbol matters. And then that's how you make your pizza. So all the ingredients, that's how you build a better website or build a better app. And it does translate to life as well. You know, having the good foundation in life is really important. Making sure that you take your time to know about yourself, to learn, to, you know, be grateful, to learn from other people, to share, and to pay credit where it's due, to be grateful. And also to just like connect with people, right? It's really important. If you don't have that, take your time. If you don't have all of that, then, you know, you're going to have a very, very bad pizza, and you don't want that. So that's what I tell to a young.
Lady Miriam, what do you want to leave our listeners with today?
I give every time I do a podcast, I give four, I give a gift, and I hope I can give this to your listeners. So there are four type of listening that we all do across the world. And then the first listening is we listen by distraction. And when someone is doing a podcast or whatever you're doing, audio economy world, it's very, very important that you listen very carefully. 80% listening, 20% talking, almost. Listening by distraction, we all do this across the world. It's very, very bad. The second listening we do is listening by judgment. So we always judging people. We don't listen really. And the third listening we do is listening by comparison, where we compare ourselves to other people. And the other listening we do is listening by charity. You know, we really don't care about the person. Oh, really? Oh, yes. Oh, really? Or we repeat the same, what the person said to us, we repeat the same thing. And then we just like, we're really not listening. And I think the gift I would like to give to your listeners is let's listen with reciprocity. When you listen with reciprocity, you build meaningful relationships. And I've got this in my book. It's going to come in the next couple of months.
I'm excited to read it or listen to it. Are you recording it too?
Yes, absolutely. So
it's nice.
And then the part of listening is because I really find that I learned this in Nepal when I went there to, you know, spend a couple of months. When you listen with reciprocity, you really connect with people, because you are taking your time to reciprocate and feel them. Right? You're not distracted, you're not judging, you're not comparing, you're just listening to every single word they say. So I really hope that your listeners can take this gift from me.